Near the end of 2017, a dog is caught by his owner chewing on a human skull. It would take 4 years for the remains to be identified and a killer found out. This is the case of Barron County John Doe, 2017. Hello and welcome back to The Ties That Find. I am your host, Rachel, and thank you so much for checking us out. Thank you so much for coming back. If you are a regular listener, and for all the newbies, welcome, welcome. Here we learn about cold cases that are solved and John and Jane Does that are identified using forensic genealogy and family mapping. It is a pretty small niche in the true crime format, but we are here and we are doing the work and we are learning about all these cases that otherwise would not have been solved. So thank you so much for coming back or for, like I said, tuning in for the first time. And I very much appreciate any of the shares that you can also put out there into the interwebs and on the socials. Today's case is something that I've actually been following since the beginning of the year. And it's not completely solved only because we have one suspect that hasn't been through completely through the court system just yet, but we'll get there. But I did find it a pretty fascinating case because this is not a stranger on stranger case as we so often see here on the podcast. This week's source shout out is actually going to be the arrest warrant that was issued for one of the defendants. And with that, let's get into it. So here we are. We're going to start in Maple Grove, Wisconsin. This is in Barron County, Wisconsin, and Maple Grove has less than 1,000 people, but it does span the course of 35 square miles, which is going to end up being less than 30 people per square mile. Now, my own population and where I live, my own town on Long Island, the density is about 2,300 people per square mile. So yeah, this is pretty barren land. There is about 350 homes here in the whole 35 square mile radius, and it averages about 10 houses per mile. And so it's pretty much all land. And Google Maps lays it out as pretty much a legitimate square, just like maybe a little bit longer on one end than it is on the other side. But it's kind of like the end of Castaways, if you remember, when after Chuck drops off that package at the lady's house and he's at that intersection and he ends up meeting up with the lady without realizing that it's her at first. But there's like nothing. It's all just barren, like desert land. It's kind of like this. That's where we are here. Except where it's not really desert. It is, there's grass, there's some trees here and there, but it really is just a county road, just a paved county road that just keeps going. Kind of next intersection, and then you can turn left or right if you want, but you're still going to end up with the same. So that's where we are. Barron County, Wisconsin is also home to Barron, Wisconsin. This is where Jamie Kloss and her family lived when her parents were so brutally murdered and she was kidnapped back in 2018. She was held captive under piece of shit Jake Patterson's bed for upwards of like 2 months, I think it was. Yeah, almost 3 months. And she finally escaped in January of 19. So that does put Barron County on the map in that respect. But other than that, it's just a tiny rural town that we're going to focus in on here in a very rural area of Wisconsin. And on December 3rd of 2017, we've got a homeowner glances out his front window and he sees his dog laying in the driveway, occupied with something. He goes out and he sees that the dog is chewing on something. And then he realizes it's a bone. And he takes a closer look at it and he thinks it's a skull, a human skull. So he takes it away from his dog and he puts it in a Ziploc bag and he calls the sheriff's department. And he's calling the sheriff's department because, like we said, the town is so tiny, it's barely even a blip on the map, that they don't even have their own police department. They just call the sheriff whenever they need something. So the deputy shows up and the homeowner tells him that his dog usually doesn't go that far from home. So they think they're really going to be able to discover maybe any other kinds of remains just in the near vicinity, which they do. The house is on a road, just like we said before, that's just like sandwiched between two open fields, like maybe some trees here and there. But police do not have to look that far off the road before they find the rest of the skeleton. Within 2 hours, the rest of the body that they find is, aside from the skull, are the human ribs, backbone, legs, and other miscellaneous bones They also find clothing and a full set of dentures. Part of the clothing includes a piece of denim material with a Wrangler tag. So the sheriff's department takes the remains to Midwest Medical Examiner's office over in Ramsey, Minnesota. Again, that's how bare bones this town is. Not only are they traveling outside their county, but they're traveling into a different state to get some forensics help. And the first thing that the medical examiner finds is that the skull has a clear and concise bullet hole in it. They believe the trajectory was from the decedent's left to the right, from the front to the back, and then downwards. So this would mean that the gun was more to the front left side of his head, angled down. And if the man was pushing like 6 feet tall, which is what they're going to say, did this happen like during a fight? Was he bent over or laying down or crouching, maybe sitting down? It is determined that this is a man. He's aged maybe 35 to 55, maybe 5'10", and his death occurred anywhere from 1 to 10 years ago. So that's not really much of a help, but they're going to work with what they can. Initial searches of local missing people come up with nothing. And remember, there's only like 1,000 people in the town. So we would pretty much know right away if any of our own townspeople had gone missing in the last few years. So police will send the remains off to the University of North Texas for further analysis to see if they can get any more information. But no new information comes of this. In fact, it's really just more like a second opinion. The only difference, it seems, that they come up with is that he wasn't necessarily between 35 and 55 when he died, but maybe more of a broader range of possibly 30 to 65 years old. So this is what we've got. Possibly a middle-aged man, kind of tall, no taller than 6, wearing Wrangler jeans, discovered in a barren, empty field in rural Wisconsin. We don't know what to do with that. Police are going to scratch their head for a year. And then in early 2019, in March, the sheriff gives the bone sample to DNA Solutions in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And they're going to complete another analysis and offer genealogy services as well. Awesome. So it seems at some point during this process and throughout 2019, DNA Solutions hands over the case to the DNA Doe Project. And for any new listeners, the DDP is a volunteer organization that works exclusively to give the names back to unidentified bodies that are found throughout the United States. It's an amazing group of genealogists that work tirelessly to identify these unknown bodies, completely volunteer basis. Some are going to be suicides, some are accidents, some are murders. And in the last few years, based on this new, avenue of being able to solve crimes and identify people, their success rate has grown exponentially. So by February of 2020, it was the DDP that called the Barron County Sheriff's Office to give them a possible identification that they should look into. There is a possible son that lives right next door in Minnesota, and the police have to reach out to him. So they're going to locate this possible family of this John Doe, the son. And according to the genealogy report, there's also a wife that maybe they should look into too, or, interview. And they explain the situation with the John Doe that they found over in Wisconsin, and they ask the mom and the son for some DNA swabs. Now, the mom and the son consent, and in the meantime, police ask them about their missing husband and father. And they tell detectives that he left them back in the summer of 2013, and they haven't heard from him since. So the sheriff sends the samples off for testing, and on June 23rd of 2020, the Barron County Sheriff's Department announces that the 2017 Barron County John Doe is, in fact, Gary Albert Herbs of Elko, New Market, Minnesota. We do get a comment from the DDP. The team leader, Jenny Leekus, she describes the moment that everything came into place and that they were able to really zone in and identify this body. She says, quote, "There is such exhilaration when through genetic genealogy, we can return a name to someone. But it's a bittersweet realization knowing a family will not be getting the answer that they hope for. Our hearts do go out to them," unquote. So who is Gary Herbst? Gary was born on June 2nd, 1956, and brought up in northern Wisconsin. And then he met and married Connie, 2 years younger than him, in Butternut, Wisconsin. Love these names. In 1980, they moved to Minnesota and officially settled down in Elko, Newmarket in 1981. Now, Elko has a booming population of 4,000 people, but it is only about like 4 square miles, so it is pretty dense as far as the population density goes. The most special thing about this place is it has a race car speedway, aptly named Elko Speedway, and they actually have like car races there every few weeks. So their son, Austin, he was born on May 30th of 1994, and over the years, as he grew up, Gary worked as a machinist and a mechanic at a few different jobs, and Connie had worked as a cook. Austin would be their only child. So when police go knocking on their door saying, you know, hey, we've got this, you know, this John Doe we have over in Wisconsin, Connie and Austin are actually living in New Prague, Minnesota, which is 20 minutes away from where they lived when Gary was around over in Elko, Newmarket. So we're going to go over what Connie and Austin tell the detectives in their initial interviews. Connie says that in July 2013, she was at the library and her son Austin called and told her that his dad had just come home and left. So she went back to talk to Austin about what he was trying to get across to her and find out what's going on. And he tells her that dad came home, some guy's waiting outside in the driveway, packs some shit, collects $5,000 in cash around the house, and hops back in the guy's car and tells Austin, I'm out. During Austin's interview, he tells the police the same story. I was 18 at the time. He just came home one day. He packed a bag. He left. I don't know the person that was driving the car that he left in, and he had his own pickup truck, but he left it here. He just left it behind. So I did think it was kind of weird, but after he was gone, I called my mom. Now, police find out that Connie did report Gary missing the next year in early 2014. But this is kind of weird. Like, why would she wait so long, like 10 months to report her husband missing? Well, they had just finished saying that he had gone of his own volition, right? That he decided he was leaving the family. Well, Connie had gotten a call from Gary's brother that their mother had passed away in early 2014. And she told him, hey, he left us last summer. We don't know where he is. We have no idea what to tell you. But the brother was like, okay, well, I need my brother. Our mom died. I need to tell him. And I need his help settling her estate. So can you file a missing persons report? Maybe the police can track him down. It's a good idea. So that's what she did. And so that's why she waited so long, because she really only did it so she could help out his brother. But the Elko Newmarket Police Department didn't actually even acknowledge this missing persons report and write up a police report until the first anniversary of Gary going missing, which is like 3 months after she first contacted them that he was missing. So, I mean, after that, it really just seems like nothing was done to find him. Because it is kind of weird, right? Like, you go to the police department and it's like, I have to report a missing person. But at the same time, I'm not really looking for him because he left us. He took off. So Gary's missing person case just ends up sitting with Elko Newmarket Police Department for the next few years because they don't really have anything to go on. It doesn't really seem like anyone's really banging down their door. Now, Austin tells him in this interview that dad and mom did not have a good relationship. In fact, the marriage had really been going south for the last year or so before Gary took off. So it really wasn't like him and mom were completely shocked when it happened. And if anything, it might have been like kind of a relief for him and Connie because there wasn't going to be all that fighting in the house anymore. And Connie talked about this strained relationship in her interview too. Connie says that he left on purpose. The marriage wasn't great anyway, and she told the detectives that Gary was a dick husband. He was verbally and physically abusive, and he couldn't hold down a job for a long time. In fact, she says that she was the only one in the relationship that really had an ongoing steady income. So police finish their interviews, and they're like, all right, well, we're going to test these remains against yours and your son's cheek swabs, and we're going to get back to you when we know something more for sure. And that's when the next month in March of 2020, when the whole world shut down, the Wisconsin State Crime Lab actually does get back to Barron County and tells them, yep, that guy Austin, he is your John Doe's son. Okay, great. So it's official. Now Barron County's work is done. Barron County, they close up their case and they hand that over to the New Elko and Scott County Police Department. Because now we have a murder case going on because we have the bullet in the head. So Scott County is like, well, thanks, guys. You know, it was a lot easier when he was just missing, I'm sure, right? Well, we know this was a murder, so we do need a little bit more about this guy's life. We need to interview his friends. We need to interview any neighbors, you know, his employer, if there was one. And we have to talk to Connie and Austin again. Now, mom and son each have two more interviews before the police are going to complete their investigation. On June 16th of 2020, this is last year, their stories are really the same as they were the first time. But since these are new interviews and a few months later, there might be some new information that comes out during these conversations. So detectives present mom with a copy of a signed over car title for a 2003 Chevy Impala that they found and that was sold and signed over in December of 2017 and had Gary's signature on it. So if Gary had taken off in 2013, did he just come back in December of 2017 to sign the title for her so she could sell the car? That wouldn't make any sense. Connie explains that Gary just predated and pre-signed the titles for the vehicles that were owned by the family. That title was already signed and dated before he left them. Okay. So for 3 years, Connie was hanging on to a car that maybe she didn't want, but because Gary had predated it, she couldn't sell it until the end of 2017. Okay. That's all she gives them in this June interview. Now they're going to talk to Austin some more. They're going to talk to him, and he said that he himself also did not have a very good relationship with Dad, and which was not something that he really admitted in the first interview. And he also offered that he would never commit patricide. This is a term that he says that he knows from playing video games, okay? But maybe he did know what had happened to Dad, but he wasn't going to talk about it. Okay. So they look into any kind of friends that Gary Herbst had had. They don't find any. Interesting. But they do interview some neighbors. Now remember, mom and son had moved 20 minutes away, but they're going back to Elko Newmarket, where Gary and the family had lived back in 2013. And they're going to interview some neighbors. We have a neighbor that shared the backyard with the Herbst family and three neighbors that lived across the street from them. And they all say that Gary actually wasn't very neighborly, to say the least. He was pretty picky about his property and the property lines, and he kept the front and back lawns in prim and proper shape at all the time. He'd also yell and curse at them and anyone that really offended him in any kind of way. He'd call the police regularly to complain about them over, quote, frivolous matters. And they also said that other than that, the family really just kept to themselves. The wife and the son really didn't spend any time outside in the yard throughout the years, and they never had any people over. The only time that anyone ever remembers Gary actually even being nice or cordial when he was showing off his new Chevy Silverado pickup truck a few years just before he went missing. So they didn't remember, though, that Connie and Austin had a garage sale around the end of August that summer in 2013, and a lot of the stuff that they sold was really mostly like just men's clothing and like workshop and like mechanics tools. And at that garage sale, Connie had actually told at least one of the neighbors that Gary had just left. He left them and their son, so they were selling his shit. And then the neighbors noticed after that that mom and son really were actually hanging out more outside the house, and Austin's friends would come over and hang out, which they never did when Austin was growing up and before Gary left. So it really seemed to them that Connie and Austin were kind of like better off now that Gary was gone. There was another thing that the neighbors did have to say, though, and this is actually pretty interesting. It's a story about Gary's pickup truck being driven around the back of the house late one night, a few weeks before the garage sale. So the backyard neighbor remembers it pretty well, but one of the neighbors across the street remembers the truck being there too. It had been driven like around the back, like really late at night, and this was like driven on the grass, which we know that Gary would never have approved of. And it was like backed up really tight up against the basement sliding glass door. And then after a while, Connie and Austin are loading it up with like this big long rolled up carpet type thing. Well, it looked like a rolled up carpet. And after that, they started cleaning the floor of the basement, like really aggressively, like the concrete floor, you know, around the glass door, And they were just like really scrubbing away. And this was like around like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. It was very weird. And then when the cleaning was done, mom and son just threw some garbage bags in the back of the pickup truck, right on top of that carpet thing they tossed in there earlier. And they hooked up the family fishing boat and then they left. Well, the neighbors figured they must have gone on some kind of boating trip because none of them saw them again for the next few days. I mean, that was pretty unusual to be cleaning out the basement and then going on a boat trip in the middle of the night, don't you think? I would think so. I'm sorry, what? Like, you never saw Gary again after that? And then they sold all the shit. And you didn't think anything of it? You didn't think maybe you should call the police or anything was kind of fishy? Come on. Come on. We all know that at least one of those neighbors went to bed talking about Gary with their husband or their wife, being like, so what's going on with Gary, do you think? I mean, it's pretty peaceful in the neighborhood now without him. But remember that night in August when we looked at the windows and they were like doing all that weird stuff in the back of the house? And then they like went on a fishing trip in the middle of the night. What the fuck? You don't think they could have? Come on, what the fuck, people? But I guess they didn't think to say anything to police until the police came on knocking like 7 years after the fact. Now, it also turns out that Connie put the house up for sale in the next few months after that. And she and Austin, that's when they moved to New Prague, where they've been ever since. Detectives are also going to talk to Gary's old boss from RL Tool. He did actually have a job at the time that he took off from the family. They ask him about his departure and his personality and whatnot. And the boss says, yeah, he did work one last day, but we didn't know he was quitting or he was leaving. He just clocked out and went home and he never came back. Now, clearly, we are all thinking that mom and son did it at this point. So let's do a brief overview of the timeline. They say that Gary took off in early July. Neighbors talked about all this weird activity in the middle of the night, in the middle of August, and then the garage sale at the end of August, and then the house goes up for sale by October. But what was happening during the 6 weeks from when Gary left and when they cleared out the basement? And what were they cleaning? So it turns out at the same time that the sheriff's department is interviewing all of these neighbors, they're also checking in with the current owners of the house. And detectives give them a basic rundown of the situation as much as they can without releasing too much info about the crime, just so they can get the homeowners to give them access to the house. And the homeowner does tell them, yeah, sure, they can come in. Sure, no problem. They start talking about the basement, and then the homeowner tells them that he did remodel his basement last year in the summer of 2019. And actually, there really was this weird, dark stain on the concrete. So forensics come in, test the stain and a handful of other spots in the basement, and this concrete stain comes back as human blood. Now we're getting somewhere. Now the lab results, unfortunately, are not going to be able to point to exactly who this blood belongs to, but it definitely is blood, and there are no pets known in the house. So of course, police are very interested in talking with Connie and Austin yet again. After all, Austin did indicate that he might know what ended up happening to his father. And now we've got these bodily fluids that are found left behind where mom and son were frantically cleaning in the middle of the night a few years back before they took off for that fishing trip. And they also execute a search warrant and confiscate all the digital devices that they can find that belong to Connie and Austin. Austin says, hey, listen, IDK, I don't know. Dad worked in the basement a lot. Maybe that was from him cutting himself. And yeah, Dad was mad. He was mad all the time. He was abusing my mom, too, in the past few years before he left. And I would have to jump in to protect her during these fights. And so he was a dick to me, too. And he also told the police that his mom and him did go fishing those few days in August of 2013. They went north up to Turtle Flambeau Flowage over in Wisconsin. Now, this is a huge, huge lake. It's like it was started out as a man-made lake, but now it's like it's Turtle River and Flambeau River coming together. They were filling up all these other smaller lakes, it seems. And then at one point, the government was just like, let's just merge them all together and make one big, we're going to put in a dam. We're going to make one big river basin kind of thing. And that's what Turtle Flambeau Flowage is now. And it's gorgeous. So the pictures on the website are phenomenal. Got a lot of awesome reviews. The views are spectacular. camping, hiking, fishing, boating, all sorts, anything you want to do in nature for vacation, that's what you can do there. So then police ask Austin about this gun that they know Connie had purchased back in the 90s. So does he know where that gun is now? And he says, they don't have to worry about the gun. It's in 60 feet of water. He says, it's in Flambeau flowage, and I can take you there if you want. Okay, well, did you put it there? And then Austin clams up. He says, I'd like to talk to my mom about this before I answer any more questions. But I didn't kill my dad. Okay. For Connie's part, she does stay quiet throughout this third interview, and she lets detectives talk to her and ask her questions for like an hour and a half. But then finally, she's just like, I'm not talking. I want a lawyer. So I'm like, okay, hands off then. When the forensic report comes back for Connie and Austin's electronics devices, there's some pretty interesting texts that they discover between mother and son. On June 24th of last year, in between their second and third interviews, Connie texted Austin, quote, it was on Channel News last night, unquote. And it turns out that the night before, Barron County Sheriff's Office had issued a press release on the remains being identified and investigated as a homicide, and it was aired on the local news. And on July 18th of 2020, about a month later, Austin was hanging out and like camping and vacationing with some friends over on Flambeau Lake when he gets another text from mom that says, quote, you need to call me ASAP, actually right away. And then a half an hour after that, quote, might have a problem. They are searching 347, which is the address of the house. Don't mean to fuck up your vacation. Just wanted you to know it's in the paper, unquote. Police are going to end up talking to Austin's friends, and his friends do confirm that he actually did speak with his mother while they were there that day. So with that, on November 19th, 2020, the Scott County Sheriff's Department announces the arrests of Connie and Austin Erbs for the July 2013 murder and disposal of their husband and father, Gary Albert Herbst. Gary had been 57 years old at the time of his death, and it turns out that the University of Texas was right. They said 30 to 65 years old, and Gary was 57. Both Connie and Austin are going to be charged with aiding and abetting second-degree intentional murder, not premeditated. If convicted, the maximum sentence is 40 years. And by March of this year, Austin just gives it up. He decides to plead guilty. And so this is how the official story goes. On or about July 6, 2013, it's in the afternoon, Mom is at the library, and Gary and Austin are home. Gary was sleeping in the bedroom, and Austin got his mom's gun and shot his father at point-blank range while he slept. He then called Mom, and she came home, and then they kept him around in the house for 6 weeks. Gross. And then in the middle of August, they rolled him up in the carpet in the middle of the night, put him in the bed of the Silverado, hooked up the boat to the back of the truck, and went north into Wisconsin. While in Wisconsin, they tossed the gun in Turtle Lake and dumped Gary's body in the field over by the dog's house. This really is so confusing to me, though, because it's a 2-hour drive from their house in Minnesota to the body site, and then another 2 hours north and east up to the lake. Like, if they were going to go so far as to put the gun in the lake, why didn't they just put Gary in the lake, too? Duh. They had the boat. They were there. And the lake is, like I said, it's huge. It's like 13,000 acres, so I don't get it. They were clearly planning on going to the lake when they left the house with him because they had the boat hooked up to the truck. So it's just very weird. He would still be missing to this day if they put him in there. It's very weird. But I do think a plea was inevitable, right? I mean, we could tell that he was probably going to eventually plea out just by the way that the interviews were progressing. It was really panning out to be like one of those tons of cases where every interview gets you a little closer and closer to the truth. Austin first started saying, well, my parents didn't get along. And then later, well, I didn't get along with my dad. And then later, well, my dad was abusive. And then, well, I know where the family gun is. We tossed it in the water after we deep cleaned the basement in the middle of the night. Like, come on. So Austin does tell us in his plea agreement that dad was a complete and total dick since he was in elementary school. He would burn Austin with his cigarettes, for infractions as minor as interrupting him while he was speaking. And he also, for Connie, wouldn't allow her to have any kind of social life, and he would beat her on the regular. Connie wasn't even allowed to attend her own mother's funeral. Do we think these allegations are true, though? Because the neighbors did say that Gary was a jerk, but they don't necessarily say that he was violent. I don't know. It's tough because we don't really hear any more like details about that stuff from the neighbors or from any like school officials for Austin or employer details about his, you know, personality or anything, what his temperament. But so we really do have to just go off of Austin and Connie's statements. In his statement, in his plea agreement, Austin says, quote, "To this day, I believe he was going to kill her that night. If I would have stood aside, my mom would be dead. I knew what I did and why I did it. And to this day, I'm confident that my decisions were justified," unquote. So that's a pretty ballsy way of excusing yourself from murder. But I mean, maybe it just lends more to the fact that maybe he's being more truthful. But maybe it does lend to the fact that he is telling the truth about the way Gary treated his wife and son. So I did some searching in the newspaper archives and found a few things about Mr. Gary A. Herbst, born in 1956. In 1977, he was jailed for 5 days when he was caught driving without a license. It had been revoked prior, apparently, which isn't too big of a thing, but he is on police radar. This is over in Wisconsin. And then I found this other article also in Wisconsin in 1981, and this may contradict what we know. So when it comes to the newspaper articles and the dates, I want to trust those more over than I want to trust like something that I find in a newspaper that that is printed after the fact, recalling something that happened decades ago. Because if it's printed in the newspaper and it says this happened on Monday and Monday in the newspaper was just 2 days ago, I'm going to believe you. I'm going to believe that newspaper article over something where they say, where they list a date, but they're talking about a date that happened, like I said, decades ago. So it's possible that the Herbst did not move from Wisconsin into Minnesota in 1981. Maybe it was 1991. Maybe, I don't know, it's a little fishy, but I believe this is our Gary Herbst here because the middle name is the same and his age is the same as our guy Gary here would be. He was living with a different person, a different woman, a living girlfriend, but they were on the outs and she had 2 kids in the house. She had a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old. He had come home on August 17th of 1981 saying, "Hey, I live here. I'm going to stay here." And she said, "No, I don't want you here. You need to leave." And he refused, and he said, again, "No, I live here. I'm going to stay here for the night, whether you like it or not." And they continued to fight. The kids were there. There was a few other like adults there as well. Not sure if there was a physical fight or not, but at some point, the girlfriend ends up with a kitchen knife and stabs him in the chest. Now, in this case, Gary was not gravely harmed, but he did need a few stitches in his chest where she stabbed him. And both Gary and the girlfriend are going to be charged with disorderly conduct. And she also got a charge for the use of a weapon. So it's very interesting. So if we believe that this is the same Gary A. Herbst and the same age, 25 years old, then that would mean that he and Connie did not move into Minnesota at that time. It is what it is. I'm not sure. The one person that does believe Austin and his allegations that his father abused him and his mother is the judge, that's for sure. Sentencing took place on June 7th, just about, 2 months ago. And per the sentencing guidelines with the charges and then with the details of the plea agreement, he was looking at anywhere between 21 and 31 years in prison. But instead, Judge Carrie Lennon sentenced him to 12 and a half years. And with time served and with good behavior, he could be out in under 8 years. Now, Austin is 27 right now in 2021, so he could be out before he's actually even 35 years old. Do we agree with this? I'm not sure. I think we're going to leave it up to everyone's decision. I'm not sure if I want to. I think it's a good sentence. I'm surprised it isn't longer because we don't have the concrete evidence to back it up. We don't have other testimony to back up the abuse allegations. But maybe there is some strong mitigating evidence that Judge Lennon knows that we don't. So it seems that Connie is still holding out. With Austin's confession and plea, we really don't know if Mom knew that he was going to kill his dad, or if she did in fact find out after the fact and then just kept quiet to protect her son. Will she start talking now that Austin's case is finalized and he's been sentenced and he's in prison? I mean, I don't know. What do you think she's going to tell us? She was supposed to be back in court last month, but I can't find any information about that appearance. Maybe it was postponed. Of course, when I get my alert, I will tell you. I will tell everyone. But of course, when I do get my email alerts for her, I will let you know. Police scoped out the spot where Austin told them that he tossed the gun, and they've actually decided that they're not going to search for it. They do have his confession, and the case is closed. They do estimate that it's under 12 feet worth of mud at this point after all the time that's passed. So, yeah. So we do have Connie that we have to follow up on. And I don't have a closing tribute here. I couldn't find anything from Gary's family, which is very weird. I was surprised. I usually have at least one or two short interviews given by family members of the deceased, but not in this case. So I guess with that, that is the case of the Barron County John Doe of 2017. So there you go. And we also do not have a could we, can we, will we be able to solve this case type case out of Wisconsin this episode. I did look for some, of course. The ones that I did find, unfortunately, bodies were found weeks after they were dumped. So I'm not sure if they were going to have any kind of up close and personal DNA that was be able to be recovered. So I'm just not going to take the chance and lead us down a rabbit hole that will not be able to be resolved by forensic genealogy. I am going to do my darndest to get an episode out in the next 2 weeks. Our family is scheduled to take an 8-day vacation, and with all the prep to get on vacation and then have the vacation and then come back, I'm going to do my darndest to get an episode out on time. If I don't, that just means that you're going to get 2 episodes when I get back, because that's going to be my next, I'm going to do my darndest. So either you're going to see me in 2 weeks as scheduled, or 3 weeks and then 4 weeks. We'll see. All right. Hope for the best. And of course, please always find me on the socials. And you can also check out the website for any show notes and sources and photographs. All right. Thank you. Bye.